I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio, and we have a really pretty interesting show for you today. We're going to have Leanne Atherton, the wonderful blues rock singer, songwriter, performer, recording artist, whatever, in our studio to perform, to play some songs, and we'll talk with her. But before that, you're going to hear a... once again, our wonderful classic 2015 interview with U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders. We did the show, it was recorded on March 27, 2015, which was not very long before he officially announced that he was running for president. On the show, we kind of nudged Bernie to make his announcement on our show, but Tracy, he just chuckled.
He was a good sport about it.
Yes, but he sure sounded like a candidate.
He did, and it's refreshing. It's like it's a different. It's amazing what a year makes. It was about a year ago that we had him on, and he now. Everybody knows who Bernie Sanders is.
Oh yeah, he was. We did the show over a phone hookup. He was in Washington, but he came down early that next week, and this was another one of those early indicators of how the burn was going to be felt, because he spoke before an enthusiastic gathering of close to 500 political activists, union members, and Bernie supporters at the Union Hall of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 520 here in Austin, and the place was packed, and the response was resounding. So we're gonna play that. Maybe we'll go right now. What you say? Tracy Schultz is my engineer, by the way. That's the turkey I'm talking to. Roger Baker's here. Roger's our photographer. And I think we're ready to just go right to Bernie Sanders.
Sure.
So, all right. U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, and I don't know how we're... Are we going to check and see if he's on the line yet?
He should be on the line now.
I am on the line.
There you are. How are you doing, sir?
How are you?
Good. I'm wonderful. How are you?
Okay. Glad to have you here. This is an honor. Bernie Sanders, I don't... You know, people say, well, Bernie, somebody needs no introduction. Well, everybody wants to have some kind of an introduction. But I think that we know that Bernie Sanders has been a leading voice in the U.S. Senate, leading progressive voice, who is known for his outspoken advocacy of issues like income inequality, big money in politics, climate change, veterans' interests, veterans' rights, and a whole lot more. And we also know that Senator Sanders, Bernie, has been for some time considering, or has been frequently mentioned as a candidate for president, and has admitted that he's looking into the possibility. But also, and extremely important, is that Senator Sanders will be here, be in Austin, for those of you listening in Austin, for a town meeting on Tuesday, March 31st at local Union Hall, and we'll find out more about that later, but also he will appear at a Travis County Democratic Party fundraiser on April 1st. So all of that, we'll tell you a little bit more later in the show. So welcome to Rag Radio, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
It's going to be great to have you here in Austin, and I look forward to seeing you in person. But I have to ask you, are you going to try to catch some of that Austin music while you're here?
If we can, I would love to do it.
There's a whole lot of it.
I know that. You got a great town there. I come from Burlington, Vermont, where we're very proud of. But Austin is a beautiful town.
And I should mention that you were mayor of Burlington and had a sterling record as mayor of Burlington, and then spent 16 years, I guess, serving Vermont as its only congressman before moving into the Senate, where you've been. And a leading voice for those of us who believe we need some basic change, and especially for economic populism. Okay, I have to ask you, I would be remiss not to ask you at this point, what your current considerations are. Now, you know, for all I know, maybe you had your Voila moment on the way to the phone, and you're going to announce right now to our audience that you're running for president. But,
well, I'm afraid that's not going to be the case. But
well,
the issue is you know, as I've said before, I am very proud and happy to be the senator from the state of Vermont. We have a great state, and I enjoy being senator from Vermont. On the other hand, what I recognize is that in this country today, we probably have more serious problems than we have had since the Great Depression. We have a middle class, which for the last 40 years, has been in decline, and you got millions of people who are working longer hours for lower wages. And we have a grotesque level of income and wealth inequality, just grotesque. You know, you're talking about today, 99% of all new income today is going into the pockets of the top 1%. You have the top 0.1% owning more wealth than the bottom 90%. You have one family, the Walton family, owning more wealth than the bottom 42% of the American people. And you got our friends like the Koch brothers, who are the second wealthiest family in the country, you know, prepared to spend more money than either the Democratic or Republican parties in the next election to push forward an extreme right-wing agenda, which represents the very, very wealthiest people in this country and decimates programs for the vast majority of the people. So when you look and then, you know, throw in climate change and, you know, throw in the fact that we're the only only major country on Earth that doesn't have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people. And, you know, there's a real gap in American politics, and we need people to stand up and say, you know, enough is enough. Everything cannot go to just the top 1%. We need to create an economy that works for the middle class and working families. We need to address the serious problems of poverty in America. We need to make college affordable for our young people. You know, and those are the issues that people feel passionately about. And what I have to weigh is whether or not one could put together, in terms of fundraising, in terms of a grassroots political infrastructure, the kind of support that we need to run a serious and winning campaign. And that's kind of what we're looking at now.
You only spent $4,000 to to win the mayor position in Burlington, but we're looking at what could well be the most expensive campaign ever in the history of this country with the 2016 presidential
election. I don't think there's much debate about it. It will be the most expensive. And it's just very, very hard to run a credible campaign without raising hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, one of the issues that we have to be frank about is the people who support me are not going to come to fundraisers where they're going to, you know, trip in $1 million apiece to support the candidate of their choice. Most of the people who support me are working class, middle class people, don't have a lot of money. So can we raise, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars you need through small campaign contributions? So that is just one of the issues we're looking at.
And of course, you've never been one who likes to call big donors.
No, I think
PACs.
No, I don't. We do receive PAC money, and I have from the unions and environmental groups, and I'm proud of that. But just to get on the phone and call up rich people, you know, what we have right now, increasingly, and I saw it last night on the floor of the Senate with the debate over the budget, this disastrous Republican budget, is it is clear to anybody's eyes is that the Congress now works precisely on behalf of the people who make the campaign contributions. That's about it. And, you know, the rich, and now it's not only the rich, it's the super, super rich, really control the political agenda. You know, when you look at, for example, you talk about climate change, it's not that all these Republicans are dummies and they can't read and they don't know what the scientific community is saying. What they have to do is weigh what the scientists are saying with what the Koch brothers and what the big oil companies, the big coal companies are saying. And those are real campaign contributions. So most of them say, well, I'm not a scientist. I don't know if climate change is real. Of course they know it's real. But they also know that if they speak up and say what is in fact true, they're not going to get the huge sums of money they need to get elected.
Well, and which brings us to the fact that they know it's true. It brings us to the fact that we face such a sort of strange time in American history where the sort of know-nothingism has reemerged, mm-hmm. and the anti-science, anti-fact phenomena that's out there. And how do we overcome that?
Look, the only way that I know that we move this country forward, and by moving the country forward, what do I mean? I mean the need to create millions of decent-paying jobs, because real unemployment is not 5.5%, it's 11%. If you include those people who have given up looking for work or who are working part-time when they want to work full-time. All right, how do you do that? How do you raise the minimum wage to a living wage? My view is that over a period of years, you would bring the minimum wage up to $15 an hour so that nobody in America lives in poverty. How do you do that? How do you deal with pay equity issues where women today are making 78 cents on the dollar compared to men? How do you deal with the overtime issue? Not a widely known issue, but as a result of antiquated fair labor standards, you have people working at McDonald's who make $25,000 a year who are working 60 hours a week. They don't get overtime, and we got to change that. So how do you deal with inequality in America, where you have billionaires paying a lower effective tax rate than a nurse or a truck driver? How do you deal with the fact that corporations are stashing, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in tax havens, like the Cayman Islands and Bermuda, and not paying any federal income taxes, so that then we run up a deficit and the Republicans say, oh, well, we got to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid and education in order to deal with the deficit, which is caused by the fact that we went to war and we forgot to pay for it, and we give tax breaks to the rich. You got the whole circular logic. How do you deal with all these things? And the answer is there's only one way to deal with it, only one way, and that is we need to put together a mass grassroots effort involving millions of working people, low-income people, who are prepared to get heavily involved in the political process, prepared to stand up and fight for their kids, are prepared to stand up and take on this incredibly powerful billionaire class, which, you know, owns much of our economy, owns, you know, to a significant degree the Republican Party and part of the Democratic Party, and also a lot of the media. So that's, when you ask, am I running for president, those are the challenges that are out there. And if you're honest and you look at it, you know, you say, well, you know what, I don't know how you can confront those. I don't know if you can confront those things. I don't know how you do it. You got to be honest about it. Because the last thing in the world you want to do is run a campaign which is ineffective. That's the last, that would be the worst thing. So those are kind of some of the issues that I'm dealing with.
What if you ran a campaign, but you were not able to raise the kind of money needed to win, but you brought those issues out to the fore and perhaps moved, let's say the candidate is Hillary Clinton, moved her to the left, or if we don't want to call it the left, brought some of those issues into the mainstream dialogue?
Well, the answer is if you run to win, but you know, not everybody wins. But the point is running a credible campaign. I have run strong, credible campaigns in which I lost, and I was proud of those efforts. I've run campaigns which I won and was not proud of the effort. But the question is when and I'm familiar with politics in the state of Vermont, that I know how to do pretty well. But when you have 50 states and you got 320 million people, can we get millions of people involved? Are people sufficiently motivated, or are they so demoralized? The fear that I would have is if you don't do it well, it's better not to be done because it would disparage the views that we hold. I think this country needs to join the rest of the world through a national health care program. But if you run and I carry that banner and I do badly, then our opposition says, see, nobody really agrees with that. Nobody thinks we need to change national priorities in America. Nobody thinks we need to ask the rich and large corporations to pay more in taxes. Nobody thinks we need to make college affordable. And that's what I don't want to do. So what we are weighing right now, and one of the reasons I'll be excited to be in Texas and California before that and in Chicago after that, is just to get a sense from how people feel. Are they prepared to jump into a strong grassroots effort? That's kind of what I want to ascertain. Do you think there is the energy out there or not?
I think there's a lot of energy out there, and I think that one of the problems that people have with the Democratic Party is that it doesn't seem to have a vision, and there's no one that seems to be pushing that vision, and that maybe it's the sort of populist wing that is the only place where there are real ideas. And I know there's a lot of feeling that, and I don't want to keep talking because I want to hear what you think, but I absolutely think there's a grassroots. And Jim Hightower was on our show a couple of weeks ago and talked about all the grassroots efforts that are happening in lots of different areas, whether it be labor, whether it be the Moral Monday movement, whether it be the Keystone Pipeline movement. And he thinks that those things are coming together into a real sort of serious grassroots populist movement. And I think that energy is there, and it's a lot of it is outside the electoral system.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, and by the way, Jim is an old and dear friend of mine, and I guess you should be very proud of your local your local agitator in Austin.
Yes.
And I hope that Jim is right. I just literally an hour or two ago spoke to a group of young students, college students, who are part of the National Student Association. who are fighting now for free tuition in public colleges and universities and lowering student debt, which is a huge issue in this country. And I think Jim is right in the sense that we have to bring all of these folks together into a powerful political movement. Because what does make me optimistic is that on issue after issue, what we find is, in fact, the American people are not as divided as the pundits tell us that we are. People want to raise the minimum wage. They want to create jobs. They want to deal with climate change. They want to make college affordable. They are outraged by the greed of the top 1% and the grotesque level of income and wealth inequality. The challenge is, in fact, which is not an easy challenge, is to bring people together around that progressive agenda, get people who are demoralized about the political process. You know, this last election in November, you had 63% of the American people not voting. 63%. You had 80% of young people not voting. How do we, in fact, make people aware of the importance of politics and get them involved in that?
One of the things we face, too, obviously, is not only making people think it matters, but making people think that they can actually have an effect on what happens.
Right.
So I would ask you, with Citizens United, with all the incredible gerrymandering, and I would say the Republicans' tendency to try to sort of consolidate power, state power, with all those different voting rights issues, how much of an obstacle is that?
Huge. I mean, it's huge. We are taking on. I mean, you have to, before you go to war, you got to know what your opponent is, who they are, and their strengths and weaknesses. These guys are extraordinarily powerful. I mean, I just, they're powerful in the sense of their control over the economy, where you have on Wall Street six financial institutions that have assets of over 60% of the GDP of the United States of America. They write issue two-thirds of the credit cards and half the mortgages in America. Think that's power? You have the Koch brothers, who are worth $85 billion, who are prepared to put not only money into campaigns, they go beyond that. They are involved in universities. They are involved in think tanks. They are involved in media. Their goal is to make a counter-revolution in America and move us back to the 1920s. Enormously powerful, smart people, well-organized. They have a database, a political database now, which is stronger than the Republican Party. And what their agenda is about is literally to repeal every piece of legislation passed in the last 80 years. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education. Do away with the concept of the minimum wage. Climate change, they are funding all of the climate deniers. You think that's they're very powerful people. And then you have, as you've indicated, the Republicans understand that their ideas are not widely supported when people know their ideas. So what you got to do is make it harder for poor people or people of color, older people to vote. So you engage in voter suppression efforts. You engage in outrageous gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is not a new idea. Republicans in the last few years are not the inventors of the concept, but they have taken it to a whole new level, which is what they do. So we have to, and then in terms of media, I'll give you an example of something. At 4 o'clock in the morning last night, I voted on the budget. That budget includes the repealing of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. It also calls for $440 billion cuts in Medicaid. If you add that together with the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, 26 million Americans would lose their health insurance. And with the cuts in Medicaid, 11 million Americans would lose their health insurance. That's 27 million Americans based on the vote last night, if that were to be implemented, which it will not. 27 million Americans would lose their health insurance because of the Republican budget. Do you think that might be a front page story in every paper in America?
No.
Well, do you think it should be a front page story?
Yes.
Have you read one word about that?
No. It's good. I'm going to be your chorus.
So this is what we're up against. In other words, Republicans can pretty much do what they want to do, and it doesn't mean, you know, for all 12 people who were watching C-SPAN last night at 3 in the morning, they saw it.
Yeah.
But the papers don't cover this stuff for a variety of reasons, significantly because of corporate control over the media. You look at this Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Do you know how much time the major networks have devoted to that?
No. I'm trying to come in on my cue here. So, yeah, it's
all right. We'll make it. We're a good team here.
Yes, yes.
I'll lay it out. You say no. That's your job. Okay.
Okay, I got it.
You got it?
Yeah, I won't. I don't even need to practice.
Okay. But this is what you got. You have the most important trade agreement in the history of the United States of America, which had zero discussion on the major networks on television. So, I mean, how do you break through all that stuff? Well, you guys, and by the way, congratulations for having a cooperative radio show that talks about real issues that impact real people. That is, we need to multiply what you do by a million times. And, you know, good, we have a lot of good websites out there. But these are the kinds of fights that we have to wage.
And it's a task. When you talked about the healthcare law, the ones who really would seem to right now have the power to get rid of it, or to basically get rid of it, would be the Supreme Court. Do you have a feel for what's going to happen there?
I don't. It comes down to one judge or something, and I can't speculate what he's going to do. But, you know, what I can tell you is that in area after area, this Supreme Court has been a disaster, has undermined democracy, and been, you know, working day and night for the wealthiest and most powerful people in this country. I think the Citizens United decision alone will make this, you know, that decision alone will probably go down as one of the worst decisions ever made by a Supreme Court, and essentially tells the billionaires, hey, you know, you own much of the economy, now you can own the United States government, and they are seizing that opportunity big time.
Okay, we just have a couple of minutes left. I wish you could stay with us for a couple of hours, but maybe we'll do it again sometime. Let me leave with this. One of the things that freaks the Republicans out, especially, is the concept of redistribution of income, redistribution of wealth, and it's, of course, you know, they don't seem to have a problem with it when it's from the top down, when it's from the bottom up, when it's redistribution
right.
of those
no,
who.
Right.
Yeah. Do
exactly
we need to redistribute wealth in this country?
Do we? Of course we do. You know, your point is well taken, and people don't know it. But from 1985 to the present, there have been trillions of dollars of wealth that have been redistributed from working families to the top 0.1%. Let me just mention one fact, and maybe we'll end on this note. We just discovered it was actually in Forbes magazine. Between 2013 and 2015, 2-year period, the wealthiest 14 people in this country, and that is, you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and the Koch brothers and a bunch of others, the wealthiest 14 people in this country saw an increase in their wealth in a 2-year period of $157 billion, an increase in their wealth. That is more money than the bottom 40% of the American people have. And that's in a 2-year period. So do we need to redistribute wealth back to the working families of this country, many of whom have $2,000 in the bank or nothing in the bank, and many of them who could go under if they had an automobile accident or a divorce or a serious illness? Of course we do. We cannot live, I mean, with the drift right now, let me just end on this note, is this country is moving pretty rapidly toward an oligarchic form of society where a small number of people have incredible wealth, incredible economic power, and incredible political power, where ordinary people have no political power, have no money, and certainly very little economic power. That is not the kind of country I think most Americans want to live in, and that's the struggle that we face right now.
Yes. Is that my line?
All right, I got to run.
Okay,
but
thank you
really
so much.
Nice to chat with you.
Senator Bernie Sanders, thank you for being with
Take
us
care.
On RAG Radio.
Okay. Bye-bye.
How cool. This was wonderful. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to take a break.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream border. This land was made for you and me.
Okay, I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. We've been listening to, well, first you were listening to my interview with Bernie Sanders, which was originally recorded on March 27th of last year, of 2015. And that was like right before, well, it was a little bit before he announced that he was going to run for president. So you got like a very kind of calm, when we look at all this, the crazy stuff that's going on and how hectic everything, a very kind of calm presentation from Bernie that sort of laid some of the groundwork for what's going on since.
Yeah, it's like Tracy, folks know him now.
Tracy, who was that we just heard singing?
That was a little clip of him doing "This Land Is Your Land." He has an EP on iTunes. It's like where they took him singing a couple of lines, more like, you know, kind of like the William Shatner style of singing, doing it's like kind of like the spoken word song. But I did like the dub remix reggae version of "This Land Is Your Land," it's like with the children's choir. That's kind of a nice touch.
It's very, very cool. So that was not only Bernie Sanders speaking, but also Bernie Sanders sort of singing. Okay, we're going to take a break, but first I want to tell everybody that our dear friend Leanne Atherton is here with us in the studio now. Leanne is a wonderful singer songwriter. Blues diva, I called her.
Whoa!
who's also an activist too, is involved in the sort of counterculture and progressive community in Austin. So we're going to talk. Hi, Leanne.
It's so good to be here, especially on your Bernie Sanders interview show. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to be there.
We saved the space for you.
I love it.
Okay, we're back with Leanne Atherton.
Howdy, y'all.
Leanne, you just rushed over here from school.
I sure did.
Leanne is, not only is she a wonderful musician, but she's a teacher. But before we get to that and to the wonderful guitar, the special, very special guitar that you brought with us to play, I want to tell people a little bit about who you are. Leanne performs at my neighborhood Dive, which is one of Austin's landmark venues, really, at Maria's Taco Express every Friday night in Austin, does these wonderful barn dances at her estate, which is also kind of like a few blocks from where I live, and wonderful stuff, and has become a sort of Austin legend. Wonderful, wonderful singer and writes great songs. And not only that, but it's just a kind of presence. She's a South Carolina girl.
I am. You're right.
So, but before we do that, before we talk, I don't know what else I was going to say. Oh, I wanted to say what Margaret Moser said.
Okay.
Margaret Moser, who's the famed Austin Chronicle and sort of Austin legend as well, music writer or was, music columnist, wrote, when it comes to barn burning, now I didn't mean to connect the barn dance and the barn burning, that's not a good association. When it comes to barn burning vocalists from Austin, they don't come any hotter than Leanne Atherton. She's got southern fireball pipes that don't quit and an indefatigable spirit.
That means I don't get tired because, you know, you can't stop. Yeah. If you stop, then they might catch up with you.
There you go. So tell us about the guitar.
Well, I brought this from school. It's a student guitar because I didn't want to be lugging around a lot of equipment today because traveling to schools, you know, you got to bring computers, you got to bring all your stuff. Yeah. It's a school guitar. I raised money with a barn fundraiser for 20 classical guitars. So we could do classical guitar in the classroom for third, fourth, and fifth graders at Pease Elementary. And Austin Classical Guitar really helped me out. They have a great curriculum that I use with the kids. So we do a little guitar, a little ukulele, a little dancing, a little singing, you know, the whole deal.
Well, that's very cool. And that's what I was giving you. My mention of the guitar was giving you an opening for that. But I think it's wonderful that the wonderful Leanne Atherton is here from school with a, with one of these wonderful student guitars all right, you know, well, one, I want to ask you about the time that you got busted in Washington, because you were just telling me about that. That's kind of fun. And then I want to talk about your family a little bit, and maybe we'll have you play the your song about the family before we even go into that. But okay, tell us about your early activist years.
Well, today I was actually reminded of it because of the 15-year-old who was arrested in Washington with the Democratic Spring. I don't know if the people have heard about it, but the, you know, people are being arrested illegally for peaceful protesting in Washington right now because they just want to get it. So we have fair voting, and you know, super PACs, and you know, got
that's a novel concept.
They got fair voting, and what are you up with all these super delegates? You know, I don't know, never. But anyway, so when I was 15, a long time ago, I was involved in the peace movement because of Gandhi and the Quakers. I got introduced to the peace movement and started leafleting the schools, you know, trying to get other high school kids interested because I was going to a progressive free school in Georgia. So one of the kids' parents were from New York City, so they invited us up for the protest in Washington, D.C. So I got to go to the protest in Washington for May Day. So April 15th and May Day. So we went up, and I just went ahead and stayed in Washington. I, since it was a free school and I was with these parents, they dropped. I said, I'm staying for the protest. And I stayed, and I hooked up with the communities that take care of you, the churches and all. They took care of us, and we did our protesting and was illegally arrested and spent 5 days in jail because of that.
And you're still living with the scars.
You know, I learned really early on, there was a woman in there singing. I mean, I saw stuff I wasn't prepared for. I did see people being not harassed on the street, but beaten up on the streets with billy clubbed, and we were tear gassed. And, you know, this is it didn't seem like the America that I had dreamed about. I didn't. So I was amazed that we were corralled into these jails and on these buses for peaceful protesting, and then they tear gassed us even in the jail cell. Wow. They didn't feed us. The churches brought food, and they brought us in the middle of the night for the because all the young people. I wouldn't tell them how old I was, so they just kept us, and they brought us in the middle of the night and made us raise her right hand, all the young ones, and promise to go home. I swear that's what happened. The ACLU represented us, and we won the case. Many years older, when I was 21, I won the case.
Yeah, that was just like a few years ago, right?
Well, you know, it was Vietnam, so you can get, start adding.
Okay. There's been a little bit, there's a little bit of sort of religious basis in your work, right?
I mean,
yes. And you do gospel singing, and I guess you've had, maybe you do the hippie church sometimes?
Yeah, well, my religion is nature, taking care of Mother Earth, being part of Mother Earth, and seeing the oneness of mankind. So, has run, that thread has run through my life since being introduced to Unity Church and the peace movement, really.
Right. I was at Unity Church to see Peter Yarrow.
Awesome.
Very, very cool. I've been there a few times.
I sing at Unity a lot.
Yeah. Well, then let me know next time.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, sing for us.
You want a song?
I want a song.
Just any old song.
Well, you could do the family one, because then we'll
You want to do the family one? Okay.
Do the family.
Okay. Well, you said I'm from South Carolina, but I'm really from Alabama, where I was born. So I spent my youth growing up in Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
But every summer we'd go back to Alabama. So this is about my mother's journey away from Alabama. And it's about more peaceful times, you know. Fireflies, blackberry cobbler, washing in grandma's well water. Twilight over Alabama. Feather beds, porch rocker, radio playing Loretta. I remember Alabama. Oh, when the evening falls in Alabama, the crickets and the whippoorwills gather. Mosquitoes buzzing, me and my cousins, we laugh the day away and wait till morning. Waking up to Alabama. La da 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 da, la da da da, la da 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 da. Oh, but the sunrise over Alabama, you wake up to a whole lot of clamor. There's roosters crowing, cattle lowing, and pots and pans there on the stove rattling, singing out to Alabama. You know what? Sunday comes and we're all frying chicken. There's linoleum throughout the whole kitchen. And Grandma, she cooked up a mess of greens just for me. Well, the cotton fields and the country store, I guess my mama, she wanted more. So she packed the car, but I took my jar of fireflies, some blackberry cobbler, and memories of the well water. I remember Alabama. Yes, I remember sweet Alabama. Oh, yes, I remember Alabama.
Ooh. Leanne Atherton on Rag Radio. Wonderful. Wonderful. Your parents were kind of from different backgrounds and sort of provided different musical inspiration for you, I think.
They sure were. I call my mother a hillbilly housewife who was from that backwoods, Washington, the well water, to my dad, who was sophisticated, you know, Air Force pilot and listening to Harry Belafonte and Peter, Paul and Mary. And, you know, got turned on like that. So she would listen to more like, you know, Porter Wagner.
Well, that's
and I love Porter Wagner, and I love Harry Belafonte too. So.
Yeah, so Belafonte's a Bernie Sanders surrogate right now, too.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So, yeah.
That's why I brought that up.
All righty. You worked right around to that very nicely. How did you end up coming to Austin?
It was just a road trip. I was living in Nashville, you know, doing the music thing. I actually sang with Lee Greenwood, God Bless the USA, on that tour, truly. Uh-huh. And first came to Austin on that tour and going to the rodeo and saw the wildflowers and thought, oh, my God, this is an incredible town. Went up and down the drag and went to Mount Bonnell that very first night. And I thought it was very magical. But years later, I went on a road trip with my girlfriend and we went to Montgomery, and went to Key West, went to New Orleans, came to Austin, where I fell in love, and went to Santa Fe, and went back to Nashville, sublet my apartment, and I was right back here. So.
Okay. It's such a story. We hear variations on it. You fell in love with Austin, or with
Savannah? Everything. Everything. I fell in love the first night, went to Antone's, and
right.
Albert Collins was playing, and, you know, the creeks were running, and it was heaven. So, yeah.
Heaven on a biscuit.
Yeah, heaven on a biscuit.
Heaven on a biscuit. Okay, by the way, I haven't told people, and we'll mention this again at the end of the show, but you're going to be doing there's going to be a Rag Blog Rag Radio benefit on Tuesday, April 26th, that's going to feature activist, 60s New Left leader Tom Hayden, and his wife, the wonderful, renowned actress Barbara Williams and concert singer, who also has a new book out, a memoir that's receiving really a lot of acclaim, and it's about her early childhood, and which was a very nitty-gritty. She went through a lot of heavy stuff, and I haven't read the book yet, but it's supposed to be terrific. And the event is going to feature Leanne Atherton and her band. And then yeah. Barbara Williams is also going to sing.
Yeah, we'll do some, you know, since she did Joan Baez before, we'll do some Joan Baez songs. Let's do some peace songs and, you know, get the whole thing rallied up.
Well, that would be fun. Yeah, be fun. Barbara Williams played Joan Baez in a stage play that I guess, in a musical. And Variety magazine called her performance Dead On.
That's pretty cool. So that's I'm really cool. interested in meeting her and hearing her. And I want to hear what Tom has to say, you know, because I know we've got a lot of supporters of Bernie in Austin, and we want to get them all fired up.
Right. And Tom, that's a reference to the fact that Tom Hayden, for many of you don't know, just came out, who was an early Bernie supporter, just came out in support of Hillary Clinton.
So maybe we'll get him back to the Bernie side.
Yeah, everybody, let's get ready.
So. That's right.
Okay, what have we got? Why don't you do one more song, and then we're going to go to break.
Okay. Wake up the roosters. Bring on the dawn, you know we're ready to go. Come on, y'all, let's have a whole lot of fun. We got something, something to crow about. Oh, yes, we do. Come on now, perk up the coffee. Raise up the shade. Don't bring me breakfast. Co-op got it made. We got something, yeah, something to crow about, y'all. Yes, we got something. You know what? It's oh so sweet. Before we could jump, we were swept off our feet. I don't know what it is, and I can't figure it out. But Lord have mercy, Bernie Sanders, give me something to crow about. Come on, drop what you're doing. We'll make it a day and kick up our heels to get carried away. We got something, oh, something to crow about. Yeah, yeah, deep, 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 zip it up. Oh, you know we got something, baby, so sweet. Peace, love, and understanding makes our life complete. You got a job to do, we're leaving it to you. Come on, get off your... come on, do it, too. Come on, tired of teardrops and I'm bored with the blues. I'm changing my tune and I'm spreading the news. We got something, something to crow about. Yeah, 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 yeah. We got something, really, really, really something to crow about. Yeah, oh, yes, we do. Come on. It's up to you. Come on, burn it. We're with you, too.
Some singing and some scatting and some rabble-rousing from Leanne Atherton. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more singing. Okay, I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio, and my guest is the wonderful singer-songwriter Leanne Atherton. And Leanne, what were we just listening to?
We were listening to a song on my heart-traveled road called Change of Heart. I love that song. It's a true story. Changing your mind and getting over something like a monkey on your back and moving on.
Are there, by the way, are there some CDs out there that people, or are there stuff,
oh,
you
yeah,
can tell people how to find you, tell them how to go to your website.
All that
you know.
Stuff. Well, of course I have a website, thanks to my good friend Patrice Bartling for putting it up for me. You know, it's hard for musicians to get all that stuff done. I have several CDs, like maybe 7 CDs, and I'm available at leannetherton.com, and of course through, I don't know, all those things, you know, that you find online, like Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff. Order them through CD Baby, or come if you can make it out to my show sometime, then you could pick one up directly from me.
Maria's Tacos Express, right. Maria's Taco Express, right. On Fridays, and it's Leanne is spelled L-E-E-A-N-N.
Yep, Leanne Atherton.
So that could throw people if they're looking.
It
so
does.
You can search it, L-E-E-A-N-N, Atherton.
It's country, you know.
It's country. It's country, folks. Okay, play something more for us. I don't
play
want to
something
talk
else.
Too much.
Well,
I want music.
Hey, this is a new song, song off my, I don't know which one to play. I'm going to play a song.
You can do a medley.
It's kind of a church, it's a church song, since we talked about unity, if I can remember it. Ooh, yeah. I wanna believe, I wanna belong, I wanna sing and dance unafraid to a joyful song. Facing my faith, I finally figured it out. Resurrected and released from fear and doubt. So won't you roll away this boulder that keeps me in my tomb? Break down all the walls that keep me from loving you. If I could see the world through my Savior's eyes, if I could believe with the faith of a mustard seed.
On Rag Radio. You're a working musician, but you're also a working school teacher, and that seems to me not uncommon. Many things about Austin are interesting in that sense. I rarely have an Austin guest, a writer, a whatever, who doesn't also have a band on their show. But the other half of that is that it's very hard for a musician, even in a place like Austin, to support him or herself.
I didn't have to get a day job till I moved to Austin.
Yeah.
Because it's expensive here and they don't pay well here.
Yeah.
I feel for the very fortunate musicians who do make it all the time. But when I got pregnant early and was a single mother and needed to make enough money support my son, and I started working at El Mercado Restaurant, and I got a job at the Austin Chronicle, and because I had worked for a brief time at a newspaper in South Carolina, so I knew how to sell advertising, and you know it's not too hard. You just go talk to people and tell them the truth.
Yeah, and if you're really cool and warm like you, I imagine you brought in lots of bucks.
I had a lot of fun doing it. I sure did.
Right. Well, okay. We're getting down there. Why don't you play one more song for us?
Okay, it's a song about old love, finding someone after being apart for many, many years. This is on my new CD that if you want to check it out, leanneatherton.com, check it out on Spotify, download it, whatever.
What's the name of the CD?
This is called Robbie and Mona. The new CD is called Barefoot Fields. It's a folk album, really. Arm in arm down the boulevard, they strolled as the evening stars winked down to see who's in love. Giggling and gazing at the world so amazing, like stardust it slipped from above. Such a beautiful couple, I remarked as I came up admiring their style. They offered their story of life and its glory as if I were their long lost child. Robbie and Mona, 62 years older. The last time they kissed was a night just like this in the back seat of Robbie's new car. They parted the next day. Never quite all the way. So sweet and completely, look what life brings. It's never too late for first love. They drifted apart, two ships in the dark on adventures exploring the world. He became a brave soldier, stronger and bolder, and she, somebody's good girl. With family and friends, the story begins from the seed planted deep in their hearts. And as time is a healer, a wheeler, and a dealer, it's also a revealer of love. Robbie and Mona, 62 years older. The last time they kissed was a night just like this, an explosion of remarkable spark. If they'd never gone there, they never would be here. So sweet and completely, look what life brings. It's never too late for first love. Robbie and Mona.
First love, take two.
Nice, nicely done.
Thank you.
That's Leanne Atherton on Rag Radio. Have you ever, is that in relate to any of your personal?
Well, no, it's just a true story of a couple I met walking down the boulevard in Encinitas as the sun was setting, and they were so beautiful. I just said, y'all look so happy, you're so inspiring, and they told me their story. And that's it, the story of Robbie and Mona.
Wow, that's very, very cool. Have stories, like real life stories, people you've met, whatever, inspired any of your other music?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, there's a lot of stories in the songs, but mostly they're all inspired by something that's happened. You know, they're not just imaginary. People, I don't think songwriters can really do that. Maybe they can. Right, I can. Right.
Well, did Robbie and Ramona ever hear your song?
No, because we were just walking on the street.
Strangers passing. Ships in the night, mm-hmm. That type thing.
Yep, they passed. They've inspired a song they'll never know.
Okay, finally, what do you think right now? What inspires you in the music world, and what do you think of what's happening in Austin, in Austin music?
Well, you know, I love sharing ideas musically. And just the other night, I got to play with Mike Morgan out at Old Settlers for the volunteer party, and he had Van Wilkes in his band and Tony Airoldi. So I think, you know, we're old timers who've been here a long time. I think that we have such a generous spirit of sharing creativity, that spirit is hopefully will stay infectious and help the younger musicians. And I'd like to hear from some younger musicians, especially activist musicians. I'd like to know about who's involved,
okay,
what's going on now.
Leanne Atherton, this has been so much fun, and let's do a full hour sometime.
Let's do. I really enjoyed it, Thorne. Okay. I really appreciate the Rag Blog.
Cool. I want to remind people that Leanne is going to be, well, one, Leanne is at Maria's Taco Express every Friday evening if you're in Austin, and is also going to be featured at an event at the High Road on Dawson, which used to be the Elks Lodge.
I love that place.
It's a very, very cool place. It's near Barton Springs Road, and it's going to be an evening with actress Barbara Williams and her husband, Tom Hayden, and with Leanne Atherton performing and Barbara Williams performing also. And so that's Tuesday, April 26th, 7 to 10 p.m.
I hope y'all can come.
Y'all come, you hear?
Yeah.
And I also want to mention that peace activist and New Left leader Tom Hayden and his wife, actress, musician, and author Barbara Williams, will be our guests on Rag Radio next week. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio.